Welcome in, everybody, ready to dive deep into the world of Pablo Picasso. I am, that's for sure.
Always fascinating to unpack an icon like Picasso.
Absolutely. And, you know, our listeners sent in this incredible collection of excerpts about him. And I think what we're going to try to do today is go beyond just, you know, those distorted faces everyone thinks of.
Yeah, beyond the surface, right into the man himself, his life, loves, even his politics.
All of that. And how it all kind of swirls together with his art, you know?
It's all connected.
Okay, so pop quiz for anyone listening. Think you know Picasso? Did you know this guy had a name longer than like a CVS receipt?
Oh, here we go.
Get ready for this. Pablo Diego, José Francisco de Paula Juan, Nepomuceno Crispin, Crispiniano Maria Remedios de la Santísima Trinidad Ruiz Picasso.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
But it gives you a sense of, you know, his Spanish heritage, all those names. It was a tradition.
Wow. But okay, name aside, what always blows my mind is how young this guy was when he was like a total art prodigy.
It's pretty remarkable. Drawing at 9 years old, surpassing his own art teacher father by the time he was 13. And get this, 14 years old, he's accepted into the School of Fine Arts in Barcelona, like one of the top art schools.
Okay, so that level of talent, that's got to be more than just practice, right?
Mm.
What was it about Picasso's upbringing that like made this prodigy possible?
It's the million-dollar question, right? I mean, natural talent is definitely part of it. But think about this. His father, José Ruiz y Blasco, he's an art teacher. Imagine having that kind of influence right there at home.
That's like a masterclass every night at the dinner table.
Exactly. That kind of early exposure, the mentorship, that's huge.
Okay, but let's talk about those early works, right?
Yeah.
Because the Picasso we all picture, you know, the fragmented faces, the bold colors, that didn't just appear out of nowhere. There was the blue period first, and it wasn't just some teenage phase, was it?
Not at all. The blue period, it spanned from about 1901 to 1904. And it was born out of real deep sorrow.
Yeah, the death of his close friend, Carlos Casajames. I mean, it's like his palette just became all these somber blues after that.
Like he was painting with sadness itself, you know?
And when you see those paintings, like the old guitarist, you don't just see blue, you feel it. It's loneliness, isolation.
You're right. It wasn't just depiction. It was channeling emotion. It was Picasso using that canvas to show us his inner world.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
But things do start to change. We get the Rose period and suddenly there's warmth, right?
Yes. 1904, things shift. The rose, pink, orange tones, they start to become dominant. Think of Boy with a Pipe from that time.
Yeah.
There's this like fragile hope in that painting, a touch of romance even.
You can visually track the emotional journey he's on. It's amazing. But then hold on tight because things take a sharp turn into cubism, which basically like blew up the art world.
Yeah, 1907 was a big year. Picasso, along with Georges Braque, they kind of lead this charge into cubism.
And for anyone who isn't, you know, an art historian, break down cubism for us.
Okay, so imagine trying to see an object, not just from one angle, but from all angles at the same time. Like you're deconstructing it into these geometric shapes on the canvas.
Whoa, so instead of a bowl, it's like the inside, the outside, the top, all smashed together?
Exactly. And you know, La Demoiselle d'Avignon, that painting is a prime example. Five women, all these sharp angles and fragments. It was scandalous, not just because of the brothel setting, but because it was just so radically different.
Totally groundbreaking. But what always gets me is the African masks, their influence in that painting. I remember reading Picasso called them weapons he used against his fears. What was it about those masks that was so powerful for him?
Well, he first saw them at this ethnographic museum in Paris, and he was just like mesmerized. Their power, their expressiveness, how they kind of abstracted the human form.
Yeah.
It just clicked with him.
It definitely challenged how he thought about art. But this is where things get a little complicated, right? I mean, you have a European artist taking inspiration from African cultures. Is it admiration? Is it appropriation?
And that's a debate that's still going on. On one hand, you can't deny the impact these masks had on his work, especially Les Demoiselles. But you also have to look at it through the lens of colonialism and the power dynamics of that time.
It's nuanced, for sure. Not a simple answer.
Exactly. It's about recognizing the impact while also understanding that the context is complex.
It is complex. And, you know, it actually makes me think about another big theme in Picasso's life, how his relationships, like, intertwined with his artistic journey. I mean, it wasn't just masks that were shaping his work. The women in his life were a huge influence, too.
No, yeah, we can't talk about Picasso without the muses, the lovers, the drama, all of that, all those heartbreaks. I mean, they fueled so much of his art, didn't they? It wasn't a quiet life, that's for sure.
Picasso's relationships, they were like his paintings. complex, full of layers, challenging. And, you know, these weren't just like passive women sitting around. They were artists themselves, thinkers, strong personalities who inspired him, but also, you know, pushed back against him. So let's break down some of these relationships because they really do line up with some major changes in his art. We touched on Fernanda Olivier, his companion, during that early Cubist period. What was it about her that you see in those works?
With Fernanda, there's this tenderness in those early Cubist pieces, a warmth. You can almost feel their connection, even though he's like deconstructing everything into those geometric shapes.
Right, Picasso being Picasso. This wasn't some fairy tale romance, was it?
Nope, happily ever after there. In 1918, he marries Olga Koklova, a Russian ballerina. And that's a really interesting shift, going from the bohemian world to a more traditional bourgeois life.
Okay, so did his art suddenly become all to-dos and graceful poses?
It's funny you say that. You actually do start to see more realistic portraits when he's with Olga. There's even a hint of neoclassical influence there. It's like he's trying to balance these two sides of himself, the avant-garde innovator and the family man.
But we know Picasso wasn't exactly known for settling down.
You got that right. While he's still married to Olga, he starts this passionate affair with Marie-Thérèse Walter, much younger woman. And this is when you see this wave of sensuality, raw emotion just pouring out in his art.
I'm imagining swirling brushstrokes, vibrant colors. What was it about Marie-Thérèse that sparked that change?
She becomes this like recurring character in his work, you know, often in these dreamy, almost surreal settings. The way he paints her, there's a fluidity and eroticism that's a total departure from those harder edges of the Cubist period.
So each new love, a new chapter in his art. But I can't imagine things with Olga ended well once Marie-Thérèse came into the picture.
It was messy. The marriage falls apart, accusations flying, a bitter custody battle over their son. A rough time for him personally, and that definitely shows up in his art.
And as one door closes, another one opens. Enter Dora Maar, a photographer and artist herself, connected to the surrealist movement.
Yeah, and when Dora enters the scene, Picasso's work takes on this darker, more introspective tone. You see the surrealism there and the distorted figures, the dreamlike stuff. It's almost like he's exploring the psychology of it all.
It's like these relationships weren't just personal, they were artistic collaborations in a way.
Exactly. They challenged him intellectually, creatively. They pushed him to see things differently and then to express it in his work.
But then there's Françoise Hulot, and she's different because she's the one who actually walked away from Picasso, like broke free from that massive pull he had.
Françoise was a talented artist in her own right, and she wasn't content to just be a muse. She needed her own space to create, and eventually she made that tough choice to leave and, you know, build her own career as a painter.
Wow, it takes a lot of strength to do that. What's fascinating is that he had children with both Olga and Françoise, so that adds a whole other layer of complexity, doesn't it?
It does. It's a good reminder that these women weren't just figures passing through. They were mothers to his kids, which shaped his life in ways that go beyond just the art.
Okay, we've been caught up in the whirlwind of Picasso's love life, but I think it's time to talk about a painting that kind of transcends the personal and becomes this powerful statement against war. Guernica.
Guernica. It's not just a painting. It's this gut-wrenching cry against brutality. It came directly from the bombing of Guernica, a town in Basque Country, during the Spanish Civil War.
So for those of us who need a history refresher, what happened in Guernica that had such a profound effect on Picasso?
Picture this. It's April 1937. The Spanish Civil War is raging out of nowhere. German bombers, they're allied with Franco's nationalists. They attack Guernica. This town, it had no real military significance. Hundreds of innocent civilians are killed, and the town is just destroyed.
Just a horrific act of aggression, and news of this bombing, it spread quickly, shocked the world.
Absolutely. And Picasso, who was living in Paris at the time, he was devastated by the news. And it's this outrage, this grief, this horror that he pours into Guernica, which becomes one of the most iconic anti-war paintings ever created.
And, you know, when you stand in front of that painting, it's impossible not to be moved by it. It's huge. It's all in black and white. And those distorted figures, they're caught in this whirlwind of agony. It's meant to overwhelm you, right?
Absolutely. Picasso wasn't interested in realism here. He wanted to show the emotional truth of war, the chaos, the terror, just pure devastation. Look at those fragmented bodies. The screaming horse, the mother holding her dead child. It's haunting.
And I have to mention this story about Guernica. Supposedly, some Nazi officers are in Picasso's studio, and they point to the painting and ask, "Did you do this?" And Picasso, without missing a beat, says, "No, you did."
Whether that story is completely true or not, it captures Picasso's spirit, you know, his defiance, his willingness to confront injustice. Guernica was more than just art. It was a weapon against fascism, a call for peace.
Okay, so we've gone through his early years, his revolutions in art, the crazy love affairs, his powerful political statement. But Picasso lived a long life. He died in 1973 at the age of 91. What was he doing in those later years? Did he just kick back and relax, enjoy his fame?
Picasso, relax. Never. He was creating right up until the very end, still experimenting, pushing those boundaries, refusing to be put in a box, you know?
So what was he exploring then? Was it still those abstract cubist forms, or was he trying out new things?
It was like he had this hunger, you know, for new ways to express himself, always pushing, always searching. And some of those later paintings, you see him playing with neo-expressionism again, all those bold colors and like almost violent brushstrokes. And then he dives into ceramics, makes these really playful, whimsical sculptures, sometimes with a little, you know, touch of eroticism thrown in there.
Wow, so not just painting.
Oh, and there's more. He even tries poetry and playwriting.
No way. It's like he couldn't be defined by any one thing. Painter, sculptor. What do you think was behind that constant need to go beyond what people expected?
I think that's the core of his genius, right? He wasn't satisfied with this mastering something. He had to like break it apart, see what was inside, what else was possible. And there's this like this almost childlike curiosity in his later work. It's really refreshing.
Constantly reinventing himself right up to the end. It makes you wonder, did he ever feel like he'd said it all, like he'd done everything he needed to do?
I think that's what set Picasso apart. For him, art wasn't about reaching some finish line. It was about the journey, always exploring, always discovering. And I think that's a great lesson for all of us, no matter what we do in life.
Yeah, like whether you're an artist or a, I don't know, an accountant, a teacher, whatever, it's about embracing that curiosity. Trying new things, stepping outside your comfort zone, and seeing what happens.
Exactly. It's like Picasso saying, don't stop asking questions. Don't lose that wonder about the world.
I love that. So we've covered a lot of ground today. From his early days as this like crazy talented kid to the whole, you know, revolution in art he led, those complex relationships that inspired him, and the political statements that really shook things up. But what sticks with me is that drive to explore, that was with Picasso his whole life.
It's true. He was full of contradictions, capable of such tenderness and then, you know, brutal honesty. He mastered the figurative, the abstract, all of it. But through it all, there was this passion for art, this need to express himself that never went away.
And that's a pretty powerful legacy, right? It reminds us that art isn't just something we look at in a museum. It's a force.
Mm-hmm.
It can challenge us, provoke us, make us see the world in new ways.
So I think as we wrap up our deep dive into Picasso, the question is, how will his legacy inspire you? What will you create?
That's a great question to leave everyone with. We've explored the life, the loves, the art, the politics, but ultimately each of us has to find our own meaning in Picasso's incredible journey. Until next time, everyone, keep diving deep.